Welcome to episode 52, part 2 of Near Death Dolls. I'm Paige.
And I'm Lisa.
And we are your hosties with the mosties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other Tyneside shit.
That's right. We're heading back to the Mary Bell case for the conclusion of our two-part series.
Yes, it's almost over.
Thank God. It was already hard to deal with. Now I know this episode is supposed to be much worse.
Yes, it is. Yeah, there's a lot more gory details this week than there was last week. I will say that. So, warning. Yes. Now, we're going to need some drinks to get through it. Lisa, what are you drinking?
Let me just start by saying I've been drinking all day. I had mimosas in the morning. I had an old fashioned at lunchtime. And now I'm having a frozen cocktail, a Bahama Mama that was a dollar at the liquor store. It basically comes in a pouch. I think it's Daly's brand. And you just freeze it and then you squeeze it and then you pour it in your cup and you drink it.
Lisa, that sounds so good. Wait, where did you get this again? You just said the liquor store?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think our grocery store has them too. I haven't seen them, but I remember seeing them. But they're like giant Capri Suns, basically, and you freeze them.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of mush them up. You kind of let them defrost a little bit, and you mush it, and then you can just pour it into a glass, or you could just stick a straw in it because it tears at the top like a kind of like a Capri Sun.
Like a Capri Sun. Adult Capri Sun.
Yes. So I don't know if this has like hard liquor in it because I believe they sell it in our grocery store and grocery stores in Texas cannot sell hard liquor. Mm. So it might be like wine or something like that. But I have a little bottle of vodka next to me. I could just pour it in if I wanted to get really trashed. But I have been drinking all day, so maybe not.
I like everything you've said. You're drinking all day. All the drinks sound delicious. I just looked up Daly's cocktails to see where I can get them in California.
Mm-hmm. It was only a dollar.
Hell yeah. It's even better. Oh, yeah. Okay. So they're at like Target, Walmart, Aldi, Albertsons. Okay. I've got all these places I can get.
Yeah. And you find can get them anywhere.
That's awesome. I've never seen one before, but you said they were Bahama Mama?
Bahama Mama was the flavor that Kyle picked up for me. He picked it up as a treat for me. I'm like, thank you. He's like, you can have it while you record tomorrow. I'm like, yes. Yeah, that was the plan. Thank you.
That is so sweet of him.
I know. And they have all kinds of like tropical flavors. You have margarita, pina colada, I think blue Hawaiian maybe, but all the tropical flavors, yeah.
God, I want all of those right now. I just want to be at one of those fucking swim up bars in yes. the Bahamas or yes. Florida. I don't care. I'll do it in California, Mexico. Send me to one of those places.
Find me a swim up bar.
Yes! I will put on my cute bikini that I probably can't fit in really well right now.
Who cares? As long as your bottom half is in the pool, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. That's the beauty of a pool.
I agree. And my tatas are very nice. They will float above, and then everything else, all the mistakes I've made will be below water. It's like the Titanic down there.
Like an iceberg. Girl, that's the best thing about the boobs is that the more mistakes you make, sometimes they get better.
I agree. But enough about my boobs. Paige, what are you drinking?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We are talking about drinks. I am drinking wine because last week we said something about Bloody Marys. Neither of us really like Bloody Marys. Mm-mm. So I was like, what's the next best thing? Red wine. It's kind of bloody looking. So there it is.
Like it. I like it a lot. What kind?
Okay, so I've had this one on the podcast before. It is a red blend, which I'm really digging. Blends. And it is 2019 Unruly Red is the label.
I remember Unruly. I do.
It's because you got a good memory.
I wouldn't go that far, but I remember my wine.
Yeah, alcohol I got a good memory for.
Surprising, because it usually makes you forget.
Right? You would think so. Okay, now that we've got our alcohol in our bellies, and we will continue to put it in our bellies, are you ready for some Mary Bell, the conclusion?
No, I'm not.
That's the right answer, because it's going to be awful.
Well, luckily I've been drinking all day. I'm going to try and hang in there.
We'll be fine. We'll be fine. And you know what? I do want to tell everyone, including Lisa, me and you have discussed this a little bit. We have something that we're going to be calling a Dolly distraction.
Oh, yeah.
And the name is subject to change. That's what it is right now. Because, like I said, this one's going to have some really awful details in it. So right after that, me and Lisa are going to play a little game called Dolly Distraction to, you know, help us get through the episode.
To cleanse the palate, if you will.
If you will, and I will.
Okay, me too. I have to. I'm a part of this now.
We might have to do this every episode, or at least the ones with the tough subjects, mm-hmm, which is most mm-hmm. of them. So, okay. Last time on Mary Bell.
Gosh, sounds like a... the exciting conclusion.
Yeah, tune in next week for
not this.
No, it'll be different next week. So Mary Bell, she is 11 years old. She lives in Newcastle upon Tyne, more commonly referred to as just Newcastle, in the UK. The year 1968, Martin Brown, 4 years old, was found dead in a derelict building scheduled for demolition. Immediately after, young Mary Bell, known to the neighborhood as a loudmouth bully, begins acting suspiciously with her friend Norma Bell.
No relation.
Thank you. I was hoping you'd go for it.
I was trying to chew my ice really quick and be like, nope, no relation.
Yes. Yes. If you guys don't remember from last week, the documentary I watched said that like 10 million times. Every time they said Norma and Mary Bell, they had to say no relation. It's like, okay, I get it. I remembered from the last time you said that.
The last 20 times.
Exactly. They're not related. I get it. But that's where we're going to pick up, is with Mary and Norma starting to act a little weird.
All right, let's do this.
Yes. So, 1968, we're going to call it the Summer of Bell.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. Remember, we ended last week. I mentioned something about how a nursery got broken into and there was four letters found.
Right.
They were pretty creepy letters, basically confessing to the murder of Martin Brown.
Right. Wasn't there two sets of handwriting on one page, on each yes. of the pages? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So they know that two, and they, it was childish handwriting, so they figured it was two kids breaking in. They just assumed it was a prank, like a, you know, childish prank. Also mm-hmm. because at that time, the Martin Brown case was considered an accidental death.
Oh, that's right. Because wasn't there pills found beside him? Some Tylenol yes. or something?
Aspirin? Yes. Yeah, there was aspirin found next to him. And they okay. thought, well, and he was, you know, there was no marks on the body, no cause of death that was forthcoming. So they figured, oh, it's an accidental death, and some stupid kids broke into a nursery and was like, haha, I did it, you know, trying to be stupid. That's what the police thought.
Right.
Now, that happened, that nursery break-in, that happened May 26th, 1968. That was on Mary's 11th birthday. That's how she celebrated, was to break in and leave some notes in a nursery.
I mean, I understand having a little bit of cheeky fun, but that's not cool.
Yeah. 11 years old. I don't even remember what I was doing on my 11th birthday.
Not confessing to crimes.
No, I was not breaking into nurseries. That's another thing. Now, on May 31st, the nursery was broken into again. But this time, since the first break-in, they'd actually installed a burglar alarm.
Oh, okay. And what year was this? I'm sorry.
1968.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so they installed a burglar alarm after the first break-in. The second break-in on May 31st, the police showed up and found Mary and Norma breaking in.
Ha! Got caught, bitches.
Caught red-handed. And the girls immediately were like, no, we didn't do the last break-in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they were like, oh, you're here. You must have done the last one, too. And they're like, oh, no, of course, not us. We're innocent little girls. No, they're not.
No.
They denied being responsible for the break-in. They also denied having written the notes, everything. And the police released them into the custody of their parents.
Oh, yeah. And Mary's parents didn't give a crap, because wasn't the mom a prostitute and the dad was like a professional thief or something?
Exactly. Yes. You're going to release Mary into the custody of her criminal parents who aren't going to give a shit that she broke into a nursery. They're probably just going to be mad that she got caught.
Probably. They were like, do better next time.
Make sure there's no burglar alarm before you break in next time. I'm sure Billy would have been able to tell her. Billy Bell. Betty and Billy Bell are her parents, by the way. They will come up again later. Now, the evidence, because, you know, all of this is starting to just pile up against Mary and Norma.
Yeah.
But not enough to do anything yet, and the police aren't even really suspicious of them at this time. Now, the second victim, Brian Howe, H-O-W-E.
Oh, there's another victim?
Yes, there's two victims in this story. The first victim was 4 years old, I believe. Uh-huh. Yes, Martin Brown was 4 years old. Brian Howe is 3 years old.
Oh my God. Yes, where are his parents?
Where are his parents? Yes. Yeah. So Brian Howe also lived in Newcastle, very close by, all in the same neighborhood. One day he left home to go watch demolitions in Rat Alley. Remember Rat Alley?
Yes, but why? I mean, I get it because he's a little boy and that's interesting. Like, shit, I'd go watch it too, but you're three?
By himself. Yes. I'm sure his parents had said, don't go do it. And he just did anyway, but I don't know.
Keep an eye on your kids.
Yeah, 3 years old. 3 years old. In this day and age, a three-year-old can't even walk out the front door into their own yard, I'm sure. Like, you know, you watch a three-year-old.
Well, I think most normal people would be watching their kids. I don't know what kind of parents were in this neighborhood, because it doesn't sound like anybody's keeping an eye on their kids at all.
Right. I mean, it's a working-class neighborhood. Everyone's super poor. I'm sure they're working 24/7. I don't know. But also, in the 70s, when my brothers and sisters were growing up in rural Utah, they were all allowed outside all day. In fact, they were encouraged. Like, please, go outside. We don't want to see you until tonight.
I could see, like, 7, 8 and up. But not 3, 4, go out in the front yard where you can get hit by a car or,
Right. And that's another thing is that my siblings were all together. They weren't by themselves. And my sister was the oldest and, you know, watching out for the other ones and stuff like that. This little boy was by himself. Now, when Brian didn't come home that night, an immediate search was mounted. Now, I'm going to say probably because everyone's like, oh, Martin Brown died in Rat Alley not too long ago. It's only like 2 or 3 months since then. Mm-hmm. And they're probably like, oh, shit, let's go find Brian and make sure he didn't meet the same fate.
Right.
Norma and Mary, the Bells, no relation.
No relation.
No relation. Showed up to help in the search. They told Brian's older sister, Pat, that they would help look for Brian with her. Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice?
That seems awfully kind of bully Mary.
Right? I think if I were Pat, I'd be like, I'm good, thank you. I don't need your help. But anyway, she took Pat to Rat Alley, her and Norma, and Mary said, okay, I think your brother might be over there. And she pointed to a pile of concrete blocks in a nearby vacant lot and said that's where she thought he was.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, Mary said that and Pat was about to go look, but Norma, her friend, stepped in and said, no, don't look over there. There's no way he would go over there. Mm-hmm. And they went elsewhere. But that's exactly where his body was found at 11 p.m. that same night, July 31st, 1968.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Mary was trying to get Pat to go see her little brother dead, and Norma did not want that to happen.
Okay.
So maybe we're seeing a little dynamic shift here. Maybe Norma's not as happy with the relationship and what's going on as Mary is.
Or maybe she's growing a conscience and she's like, yeah, this isn't right.
I think you're right. I think she felt bad for Pat and she didn't want Pat to come across her little brother's body. Pat, I believe the older sister, I believe she was only 9 years old at this time. So Mary's trying to get this 9-year-old girl to go look at her 3-year-old dead brother. Kind of sadistic. So anyway, they found him in Rat Alley amongst some slabs of concrete and some weeds because it was a vacant lot. I'm not going to tell you at this time the state of the body. That's going to be part of the confession later on.
Okay.
But something to remember right now is that there was a pair of scissors found close to the body.
Oh, God. I'm already just wanting to just hide.
Yeah. Yeah. Start hiding a little bit mentally right now. It's not going to get better.
I'm getting under the blanket over here in my brain.
Mm-hmm. Hold on to your kitty.
Come here, Mew Mew.
So, the medical examiner, after studying Brian's body, suggested that whoever had strangled Brian, at this point, they knew it wasn't an accident for Brian. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, whoever strangled Brian, the medical examiner thought it might have been a child because there were no marks left on his neck.
So they're thinking it's a child just because there wasn't a lot of force used and it was Okay.
Exactly. Yes. There wasn't a lot of force used. So they thought that the person who was doing it wasn't very strong.
Okay. That makes sense.
Now, because of this, the police started questioning children in the area.
I bet they did.
Including. Time. Yes. Yes. It is about time. Including Mary and Norma.
No relation.
No relation.
Sorry. You didn't say the bell part. I said throw that in there.
That's our, yeah, that's the tagline for this episode, no relation.
Yes.
Now, not surprisingly, Norma and Mary started to sound pretty suspicious to the police. Norma, when they questioned her, Norma acted almost excited and nervous.
Mm-hmm.
She was smiling a lot throughout the interview, like it was some kind of game.
Or do you think it was guilt? Because I know whenever I, like, want to tell a lie, now, I don't lie a lot, but, like, with my husband, if I want to kind of like keep the truth from him on something, like I'll eventually tell him, but I can't lie because I smile way too much. I'm like, I didn't do it.
I know, right? I'm a terrible liar. This would be me too. I'd be like, oh shit, because it's kind of a game at that point, because you're trying to make up something.
Exactly. So I'm wondering if she saw it maybe through guilt, and that's why she was smiling so much and it got her excited, because she was like, oh god, I gotta lie.
Yeah,
look at it.
So anxious and nervous, it's coming off as being like nervous laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what might be happening with Norma right there, but that makes them suspicious. Mary, on the other hand, acted evasively and told police, and she was cool as a cucumber, as you can imagine.
Gosh.
She told police she had seen Brian in the company of an older boy the day that he died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and she said the older boy hit Brian for no reason, that, you know, Mary saw this happening, supposedly. And that later on, she saw the same older boy playing with a broken pair of scissors.
Oh, is that so?
Right. Maybe you should have left that part out.
Well, she's not a cunning mastermind, even though she's broken into preschools before. And
right. Yeah. She thinks she is, but she's not. So the fact that she said scissors, well, actually, so one thing is she said a specific kid. She said, it's that guy. I don't know the name that she said. That part wasn't in my sources.
Mm-hmm.
But the police went and talked to that kid and his parents, and they had been at the airport that day. So that's a rock solid alibi. It was not that kid.
Right.
But by talking about the scissors, Mary was revealing that she knew too much about the case.
Yes. That, yeah. Ooh. Oopsie.
Yeah, whoopsie doodle. Don't talk about scissors because you're not supposed to know about them. Mm-hmm. Now, and this kind of ties into what happened in the last episode when the police didn't reveal information about the tablets that were found next to Martin.
Oh, and she was drawing a picture of him with the tablets next to him, right?
Yes.
In her journal.
Yes, exactly. Good memory.
Yeah, that and booze.
That and booze.
True crime and booze, all I remember.
Me too, that's why we're here. But yes, the police remembered that nursery break-in. They remembered that, no, I'm sorry, well, this is kind of a different topic, but the police remembered that there was a nursery break-in, and they started to suspect that whoever killed Brian might have also killed Martin Brown. So all of these clues are starting to, like, piece together and point to Mary and Norma.
Right.
Now it's going to get into that part where it's talking about Mary's drawing. The police talked to Mary's teacher, obtained a sample of her handwriting to compare to the notes that were left in the nursery. And it was a perfect match. And Norma's as well. Both were a perfect match for the letters found in the nursery.
Great.
Yeah. And because they had talked to her teacher, the teacher was like, maybe I should look through Mary's journal. And he did.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So that thing that you mentioned where Mary had drawn a picture of Martin's body dead, wrote a little story about it, even drew a little bottle of pills and labeled it tablets in case anyone was confused.
Let's be clear. Yeah. Not you thinking it's anything else, guys.
Right? Like, I want to make sure you guys know that I killed him. I'm going to write tablets right here. So the teacher looked through there, saw that, and thought, okay, this is suspicious. He showed it to the police. The police were like, oh, the tablets. And the fact that the tablets were in the picture and had not been released to the public, they thought, okay, that's another strike against Mary.
She's just digging her own grave, isn't she?
Yes, and the final nail in that fucking coffin was that a witness came forward.
Aha!
Yeah, yeah. They didn't even need... I mean, they did. It's good that they had all this evidence, but the witness came forward and said that he had seen Mary and Norma from a distance with Brian that day that he died in the exact area where he was, his body was found.
It's all coming together now, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And you know what happened? What Mary said when they told her there was a witness...
Oh, God, what'd she say?
She said, he must have had some pretty good eyesight.
Jesus.
11-year-old girl. And the police were like, what do you mean? Trying to catch her saying something. Uh-huh. And at first she started to say something like, because he must have been pretty far away from me. But then she switched it up and said, because I wasn't even there. So must have had good eyesight. Like trying to save her ass from...
Goodness gracious, child.
Yeah, you've been found. You have been found out. Time to give up. So she gets arrested. Mary and Norma are arrested at this point, and they turn on each other, both saying that the other one did the murder of Brian.
Okay, yeah, that seems like kids would do that.
But they both said that neither of them had anything to do with Martin's death.
Okay, so Martin was the first one, Martin Brown, and then yes. Brian Howe. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they Martin's death, they were like, no, we didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other, they're like, Norma killed Brian or Mary killed Brian, but neither of us did Martin.
Murder is pretty bad, guys. You might as well go ahead and admit to the other one, too.
Right. At this point, they already know what you've done. So anyway, now we're going to get into the gory details. That's what part we're about to get into right now.
Okay.
Yes. Steal your stomach.
Man, I wish I hadn't eaten dino nuggies.
Ooh, that sounds tasty.
They were terrible.
I don't know, you guys. I know we've said this a few times. It's tough to talk about this stuff. It's tough to say it out loud, tough to listen to. This particular episode made me sick to my stomach just to type it out. So,
okay.
Everybody get ready. Everybody get ready.
All right.
This is from Norma's testimony. Now, this one is counted as the more truthful of the two, and we'll find out why. Now, remember, we're going to do a Dolly distraction immediately after this. So just look forward to that. Start humming.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay, yeah, just look forward to that. It'll be right as soon as we're done. Okay, here we go. Mary and Norma with Brian Howe and Mary's dog named Little Lassie.
Oh, no, wait. You didn't tell me there was a dog involved.
There's a dog involved, by the way, and its name is Little Lassie. Isn't that adorable?
Yes, but I don't want a dog to be, a part of a crime.
Yeah, luckily nothing bad happens to the dog. That's actually my last mention of the dog.
Okay, I don't want the dog to be an accomplice.
Yeah, this dog, who knows, it might have ran away at that point, I don't know.
Okay.
But they were with Brian in Rat Alley. They got to this vacant lot where Brian's body was found later. Mary told Brian to lay down amongst the concrete slabs. Mm-hmm. She told him he had a sore throat and started massaging his neck. When the massage started hurting him, Brian fought back.
Mm-hmm.
But Mary was bigger than him and started banging him around.
Okay.
The girls described Brian's face as turning blue and spit foaming out of his mouth after his head was hit against a piece of wood.
Okay.
Yes. Now, once he was dead...
Okay, so that's what killed him?
Yeah, the strangulation and the head injury. Now, once he was dead, the two girls left the scene to go find scissors and a razor. They used these two items to mutilate him post-mortem. They cut off his hair and left pieces of his hair nearby. They started cutting and slicing his legs. They also mutilated his genitals and carved a letter into his stomach.
What letter?
The letter didn't show up right away, but once the body got to the examiner, they could see it a little clearer, and it was an M for Mary.
That's what I figured.
Yeah, but they could tell that the M had originally been an N for Norma and had been changed into an M with an extra line.
Okay, but if we're thinking about this critically, when you're drawing an M, like M&M, an M starts as an N.
It does.
it takes one more slash to make it a... Now, are you saying that it was drawn as an N and then maybe the extra line to make the M looked a little wonky maybe? Or could it be just because they were probably using razors or scissors and those aren't really good drawing tools?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above.
Okay, so it could have been an N or an M, but it ended up an M ultimately.
Yes. Exactly. It ended up an M. That's what's the most important thing here. They assume because the last line looked a little weird that it had been an N first, and that to the police was like, okay, Norma and Mary. So they lopped onto that idea. But the detective working the case, when he was describing how the cuts on his body looked, this is what he said. I'm about to give a quote. There was a terrifying playfulness about it, a terrible gentleness, if you like. Mm. And somehow the playfulness of it made it more rather than less terrifying.
I can agree, because if it had been done by kids, they maybe don't understand the consequences of their actions fully. Mm-hmm. Now, I know they know what they've done and that it's wrong because they try to cover it up. But
yes.
Yeah, I could see them, I don't know if the word's experimenting by cutting him and cutting his hair and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they were playing around. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty awful. Pretty awful. And I'd have to agree with him. It makes it worse that it wasn't malicious. It was almost like they just made themselves a new doll.
I mean, it was still malicious, but it was... Like, if it had been anybody, any other normal kid besides Mary and Norma, I could see it being more or less malicious, because maybe they hurt him on accident and they were just kept playing with him as if maybe they had been playing with him all along before. But knowing that it's Mary and Norma, I'm like, eh, I don't buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, not maybe not playful is probably not the right word, even though that's the word he used. I would probably say like hesitant. Like, they don't really know what they're doing.
Okay.
That's what I would say. But I don't know. I wasn't there. But it's just awful. Now, and that's it. I feel sick. That was all the details. Welcome back. We're good now. We're going to do a Dolly distraction.
All right. Distract me, baby. One more time.
Free Britney. Hashtag Free Britney.
Hashtag Free Britney.
Okay. Dolly distraction.
Okay.
Lisa.
Yes.
Are you ready for three trivia questions about the 1991 film Addams Family?
Yes! Bring it on! I want to play!
Okay, let's do it. Okay. It's starring Angelica Houston and Christina Ricci. By the way, these first two questions are multiple choice. All right. So you get a little bit of help. So,
okay.
What is Wednesday's middle name? Now, this one's not really fair because it's not actually revealed in the movie, but it's just kind of a fun question. And, you know, I want you to pick which one sounds right.
Okay, sure.
Okay, first option, Lisa. Is that her middle name?
No.
Second option, Hester, H-E-S-T-E-R. Is that her middle name?
Possibly. What are the other options?
And third option. This is the last option.
Okay.
Is her middle name Friday?
No, it's Hester.
It's Friday!
Shut up! Is it really Wednesday, Friday?
Wednesday, Friday, Adams.
That's hilarious. A little unfair because it's not in the movie, right?
It is. Yeah, that one was unfair. That was more still, for fun.
That's fine. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. These next two. Oh, well, anyway, we'll see. So, second question. Which of these famous actors turned down the role for Fester? A. John Cusack. B. Anthony Hopkins. C. Dan Aykroyd.
Okay, Dan Aykroyd.
It was Anthony Hopkins!
No! Really?
Isn't that crazy? He said no.
That is crazy. Okay. Okay. All right. I feel like Dan Aykroyd would have been the next best choice. Like,
I do too.
Choices. Okay.
I wish. Mm. I wish he had been. I fucking love, what's his face? Christopher Lloyd as Fester. But Dan Aykroyd might have been a good choice too. Now, last question. This one is actually in the movie, and I'm sorry the other two weren't. Those were just very interesting to me.
Okay, sure. No worries.
So this one. What is the code to the Addams Family vault that Fester keeps trying to break into? And I have a hint for this one if you want it.
Is it the book, the name of the book?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh.
This one's a number, a series of numbers.
Oh, I remember. Okay. Oh my gosh, it's in my head.
There's a hint if you want it.
All right, sure, give it.
Eyes, fingers, toes. You remember that from the movie? Yeah.
Eyes, fingers, toes. It was like 2, 10, 11?
Mm-hmm.
Was it 2, 10, 11?
You got it, Lisa! 2, 10, 11. Eyes, fingers, toes.
That's right. Okay. Okay. Thank you for the hint. Okay. Okay.
That's like one of my favorite parts in the movie because it's like such a throw. Not a, it's like they threw the joke away. Like they didn't make a big deal about the fact that they have 11 toes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Love that movie, man.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next time we need a dolly distraction. We'll do something like that. I like that. Gave us a good giggle moment. Took the pressure off. I like it. Like it a lot.
We chilled out a little bit after those gross details.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to it, though.
Back to the case at hand. So now we're at the trial. Mary's parents showed up in court.
Did they now?
Betty and Billy.
Oh, Lord.
But it didn't help her case. For them to be there.
I wouldn't think so.
Right? I mean, they're both criminals, for one thing. But also, Betty, never one to just sit back and let other people get the attention, she started putting on these big dramatic displays of emotion with wailing and crying and, like, pulling her wig off and shit like that.
Wait, what? She was wearing a wig?
She had a blonde wig on that she it was, like, sliding around in her displays.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, did she... Why was she wearing a wig? Did she need it? Like, or was she just, like, wanting to go the extra mile to be dramatic and get attention?
I think it's more that one that she just wanted to... Or, you know, maybe she just constantly wore a wig. I don't know. But it didn't look good. It was not a good look. And also, Mary looked a little embarrassed and didn't want, you know... And also, Billy looked embarrassed. He just sat stoically while Betty was fucking crying and wailing.
Oh, poor Lou. All right.
So there goes Betty again, trying to use her daughter to get attention for herself.
Okay. Oh, I see the wig. It is rough. It is rough.
It is rough. It's a rough wig. It's not a good wig.
It's not on all the way.
Yes. It's just that. I don't know.
Okay.
But remember from the last episode, it kind of seemed like Betty had Munchausen by proxy. She kept making Mary sick.
Yes.
And accidentally Mary fell out of a window. Like, what? Mm-hmm. So we don't know much. You know, Betty doesn't seem like a great person. Now, Dr. Robert Orton was brought in to evaluate Mary's mental health.
Okay.
He determined that she was a psychopath.
Okay. I could have done that.
Yeah. 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 He probably talked to him for 5 minutes and then was like, oh, a psychopath. Now, on the stand, he said, I think that this girl must be regarded as suffering from psychopathic personality. And this was his description of her symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
A lack of feeling quality to other humans. And a liability to act on impulse without forethought.
Yep, that sounds about right.
That second one, the impulsiveness, that could also just be an 11-year-old. I don't know, personally. I'm not a psychiatrist. But true. Yes, absolutely lack of feeling to other humans. That part, for sure. And here's the sentencing. The prosecution in this case painted Norma, the friend, to be a victim of Mary's overbearing personality.
I mean, maybe a smidge, but she was old enough. She knew better.
I can't say, Lisa, if this was just kind of some weird 1960s backwards thought, but they kept describing Norma as being dull and stupid.
Well, you know what? If it were me, if I were Norma and I've been hanging around with Mary over here, go ahead and call me stupid if it gets me off the hook.
Yes. Yes. She probably had no problem with that. But yeah, they kept saying, like, even though she was older than Mary, that she was dull. That was the word they used the most, was dull.
Jeez.
Like, low IQ. Yeah, I was like, oh, ouch. Okay. And they said Mary was a lot smarter than her. So they just assumed that. So they said Mary was cunning, evil, intelligent, and a murderer. But Norma, not necessarily.
Dull.
Well, yeah. But Norma was there. Norma did her fair share, too.
No relation.
No relation. No relation. And at the end of deliberations, Mary was found guilty of manslaughter. Now, it's manslaughter, not murder, because of diminished responsibility.
Now, is that because they were kids?
I'll read you what the judge said. It's kind of a UK term that I'd never really heard before.
Okay.
Now, she also was found guilty for both Brian and Martin's deaths. I thought that was important to put
good.
In there.
Good. Okay, good.
Yes. Yes, very good. And the judge, so this is what the judge had to say about diminished responsibility. In 1957, there was an act of parliament, and it said that where a person kills or is a party to the killing of another, he shall not be convicted of murder if he was suffering from such abnormality of mind, whether arising from a condition of arrested or retarded development of mind, or any inherent causes or induced by disease or injury, as substantially impaired his mental responsibility for his acts.
Well, that's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. And I guess it's basically, it's almost like not guilty due to insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So not necessarily for her age, more for the fact that she was a psychopath.
Okay.
I'm assuming. Now, Norma was found not guilty, but later she did end up doing 3 years of probation for breaking and entering into the nursery and placed under psychiatric evaluation.
Because she was so dull.
Because she was dull. She was a prime best friend for a murderer.
Jesus. Okay.
Now, incarceration. Mary's incarceration was quote-unquote indefinite.
Okay.
So that's kind of similar to when we did the Silent Twins, the Gibbons sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They were also indefinite incarceration at the Queen's mercy or mm-hmm. whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Mary was transferred to several different facilities from 1968 to 1980 when she was released.
Oh, shit. Okay.
During this time, Betty, Mary's mom, encouraged Mary to write her letters and poems and songs and just send me shit so that I can sell it to the press.
No, that's evil.
Isn't that evil? It's like, girl, your daughter is in jail for killing two baby boys and you're worrying about selling stuff to the press.
She's exploiting it. That's crazy.
Yeah, she just wants the money and the attention. Because she got on all of the networks trying to talk about her daughter and get attention for herself.
I bet she did.
Yes, she was probably like, this is the best gift my daughter ever gave me. Now, Mary, on the other hand, finally away from her mother, flourished at school. Because she was going to, like, basically a boarding school, a heavy security boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
She liked her teachers. She was bright. They liked her. She got good grades. She was good at school when she wasn't going home to her mom at night.
Oh, okay.
At the age of 16, she was taken out of that reform school that I just mentioned and sent to a woman's prison mm-hmm. where she served out the rest of her sentence until the age of 23. Upon her release at the age of 23, Mary Bell was given a new identity so that she could go on with her life and not be hounded by the press. Because the press was all over this Mary Bell case, especially with fucking Betty over there just keep pushing shit out. Like, hey, look, another thing my daughter wrote.
Keep us relevant.
Mm-hmm. There was even a letter that Mary wrote to Betty that said, basically, she blamed Betty for absolutely everything. She said, you know, I did wrong, but it's all your fault. Like, you raised me wrong, basically. I blame you.
Yeah, but still.
No, yeah, I mean, Mary shouldn't have done any of that shit, but Betty for sure also shouldn't have done anything. Mary's awful because of her mom, but she's still awful. So there's some books about Mary Bell written by one person named Gita Sereny.
Mm-hmm.
The books are called The Case of Mary Bell. That came out in 1972. So that was only, I don't know, handful of years after Mary committed her murders.
Mm-hmm.
The second book is called Cries Unheard, The Story of Mary Bell.
Aww.
Yeah, that one came out in 1998. The book called Cries Unheard included Mary's own account of her relationship with her mother, Betty Bell.
So how did they get that? Was that something they got? Did they actually identify Mary Bell after she changed her identity?
Yeah, so Gita, mm-hmm. the writer, she stayed in contact with Mary even, like you said, with the identity switch up. So Mary Bell did an exclusive interview with Gita Sereny to give her the I don't know if you guys remember, but last time we were talking about Betty and Mary's relationship, and I talked about all the incidents with Mary as a little girl.
Like some of the Munchausen by proxy type stuff?
Yeah, her feeding Mary pills and pushing her out a window and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's just the stuff that people saw on the outside. And next episode, we're going to talk about what Mary's got to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Mary's got to say.
Oh, God.
Yes. So in this book, she revealed that Betty, her mom, who was a prostitute, would bring her clients home with her.
Yeah.
And Mary said, starting from the age of 4, she was forced to take part in the activities with these clients.
No. Oh, yes. God.
Awful. Mary said Betty would grab her by the arm and pull her hair in order to offer her to these paying clients.
No, she was pimping out her daughter. No!
Yes, she was pimping out her daughter from the age of 4.
Oh, that's Mary. Sick.
I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm wondering if that's why she targeted little boys at the same age of when she was starting to get victimized. And maybe, like, she was trying to go back somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It doesn't excuse anything.
No, it doesn't. But that also kind of does paint things in a different light. Was any of that brought up during the trial? Like, that she had been abused by her, like, by her mom and the mom's clients?
No, she didn't say anything back then. She said that she, when she was a little girl, when she was 11 years old, going through the trial, mm-hmm. she told her prison guards and her attorney and whatever that she was basically trying really hard to appear unemotional and not give any information. And, you know, so she did not come out and talk about her mom at all. Not until 1998. So, so sometimes Mary had to have sex with the clients, and sometimes the clients would pay for Betty to tie up Mary and whip her for their entertainment.
Oh, God. I'm going to need another dully distraction. Okay. That's rough.
I should have written another one.
No, that's sick.
It is. So in the books, back to that, in the book, Mary talks about how she would go play with her friend Norma and that the two would try to live in a fantasy world where nothing else existed, mm-hmm. especially not her mom and her mom's client. She said that her and Norma started daring each other to do naughty things and that they didn't understand or mean to kill those little boys, quote unquote, forever. So they, I don't know, for some reason they assumed that in this fantasy world they could do whatever without any consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Now the book itself, the one I mentioned, The Cries Unheard, The Story of Mary Bell, supposedly, I haven't read it myself. It says, I've read up on it and it says that it's got a lot of contradictions in it. And that leads some people to think that Mary might have either made up the abuse in order to get sympathy,
mm-hmm.
or she embellished the story, or who knows what.
You know, sometimes when you're going through traumas, you'll misremember things. Maybe she just misremembered.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, maybe it wasn't even Mary's fault, because she didn't write the book. Maybe Gita, the writer,
mm-hmm.
was the one who's responsible for the contradictions. Sure. I don't know. Could be either one. And we'll never know, though, because Betty Bell, the mother, died sometime after 2009.
Okay.
So we only have Mary's word.
Well, you think Betty was really going to tell the truth anyway? Like, oh yeah, for sure I pimped out my daughter when she was 4 and up.
I don't think so, no. I don't think so. She would have said no. Yeah, it doesn't matter if she was alive or not. Yeah, she wouldn't have admitted to it, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get to Mary the Reformed. Fairly soon after she was released, remember she was 23 when she was released, she got married and had a daughter of her own.
That does not sit well with me.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, she's got her own new identity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on with the husband here, but I do know that her daughter didn't know who she was for a very long time.
Ooh, that's kind of a scary thought.
Her daughter, I believe, was either 16 or 17 when somebody in the press figured out who Mary Bell's new identity was. Blasted it, put mm-hmm. it on blast. And that's when the daughter found out.
Oh, God.
That's kind of a shitty way to figure that out.
No kidding. What if Mary had been an ideal mother and then you find out that she was a murderer? Like, murdered two children.
Children, yes, exactly. Like, that just changes your whole life.
Yeah, for sure.
The daughter, it was reported that the daughter said to her mom, like, why didn't you tell me this? You were younger then than I am now, and you still never told me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so because of that breach of her her protective identity, she and her daughter went to court, mm-hmm. and they were both granted lifelong anonymity by the courts for the rest of their lives. So anytime if they're ever exposed again, they can get a new identity again and mm-hmm. hide. And in 2009, it was revealed that her daughter, so Mary's daughter, had a child. And so Mary Bell is a grandma.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah.
Strange.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, it feels weird.
It's weird to think about. I mean, it's not weird to be a grandma, but it's just weird to think about.
Yeah, it's weird to think about Mary Bell being a grandma. Mm-hmm. And in the city of Newcastle, where she grew up, the families of her victims, and I don't even know if we can blame them for this, they'd never forgiven her.
Yeah, that's a hard one to forgive.
No matter what happened to Mary as a little kid, she took away two little boys' lives. Mm-hmm. And their moms and their sisters and things like that have come forward and said things like, I guess I'm happy for Mary that she has a grandchild, but I was robbed of my child and that future mm-hmm. that he had.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be grandmothers from those kids because of Mary. It's Mary's fault. Mm-hmm. And Norma as well. But, you know, she's kind of forgotten after the trial.
So we don't really know what happened to Norma after the trial?
No. She did do 3 years probation, but I don't really know after that. So that's the end of the story.
Oh, thank God. Not that you didn't do a good job, Paige, because you did. But oh my God, my heart.
Yes, it's hard. It's hard, man. My stomach's all twisty and turny just from saying this shit out loud.
But you know what? Like, you had to sit through the research and the documentaries and all that stuff. And I don't know about you, but every once in a while, I will leave out maybe a detail, or I might phrase it differently than it is.
If it's too rough.
If it's too rough, or like I might try and more gently say something. But I know we both, and if you're like a true crime fan, like you've watched things and read things that have every single detail, and ooh, it's rough. It is rough, dude.
There are different kinds of documentaries. Some of them will leave in all the details. Some of them will give you kind of the bare minimum information. It's hard to say. But yeah, I do the same thing, Lisa. I'll try to like in this episode, I didn't go into detail about how his body was mutilated too much. I was just like, you know what? That's enough. That's enough.
We got the idea.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, get the idea across. Let the person who's listening, imagination take over, because it will, unfortunately.
And you're always welcome to go look up the details if you'd like.
Yep, go watch the documentary. I found it on YouTube. It's called The Case of Mary Bell. It's about an hour long, maybe a little less. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of information. It talks to a lot of the people who lived in the neighborhood with her. It's very interesting. Whew. But Lisa, comparing Mary Bell to the other children we've covered, what do you think? She got a new identity. The other kids didn't, as far as we know.
That's true. Wow. I'm trying to think. Okay, so we've covered Victoria Dalton. Mm-hmm. And she, how many did she kill? Two or three? Two?
Two.
Two.
She killed two as well. Mm-hmm.
There was a baby, and then there was the slightly older girl.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're right. It was a 2-year-old and, like, a 6-month-old or something, yeah.
Yeah, so that one, and Cameron Kocher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the one that shot his neighbor's friend, little girl, on the snowmobile.
Snowmobile, yeah. Yes. It was a snow day, that's right.
Gosh, I don't know how. I mean, they all seem like they have weird circumstances. Like, okay, so Victoria Dalton and Mary Bell had rougher childhood upbringings. Cameron Kocher didn't. He seemed to have a very normal. He just seemed to have kind of an odd anger issue.
Yeah, as far as we know, his parents were good.
Yeah. I don't want to say I lend more sympathy and understanding to the situations with Mary and Victoria, but I do, because, you know, if it hadn't been for the situation that they grew up in, this might not have happened.
Yes, exactly. And both of them, and Cameron, as far as we know, all three of them, when they were quote unquote reformed and let out, they were fine the rest of their lives. They didn't kill anybody else.
Yeah, not that we know of, anyway.
Not that we know of. Uh-huh. That's a good point. But, like, they were honestly, quote-unquote, reformed. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to my friend about this, somebody who's absolutely not interested in true crime and cannot stand the gory details. Mm-hmm. But she was saying, like, you know, if you think about it, at least in Mary Bell's case, from the age of 11 to the age of 23, that is a huge turning point in people's lives. They change so much in that quote-unquote short amount of time.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And if you're sent to reform school, like, basically Mary was sent to go get psychiatric help and spend that time from 11 to 23 getting better, that might be the only time in your life that you're actually open to changing like that in such a dramatic way.
And she was also probably offered a lot more stability than she had been used to at home, like a watchful eye, probably meals. She's not being abused, if that was true. So yes. I could see that being such a positive thing in her life that she hadn't had before and mm-hmm. was able to reform and be accepting of change and in that way over those years. But stability, maybe. Really.
Yeah, exactly. She finally was able to concentrate on schoolwork and she was happy about it. Like she did a really good job in school, made friends, wasn't a bully.
Yeah, and she didn't see her narcissistic mother probably every day, albeit she probably got a lot of letters or maybe visits from her mother. I'm not sure about that, but
she did. Yeah, her mom came and visited her kind of frequently mm-hmm. to, you know, and then would go and do a TV interview about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gross.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can't, it's hard to compare cases. Cases are so different. You can't really say one is similar to another, but
yeah,
I would say, I think at least in Victoria and Mary's cases that if they had different upbringings, like you said, I don't think they would have done it.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And the parents didn't get punished. I mean, how could you? You can't send the parents to jail for that, but that's kind of who started this whole thing. Path.
Right. And you know, comparing the children again, like the nature versus nurture, I'm very big on the nurture side being what drives them to do what they do.
Yes.
Except for Cameron, because it seemed, like I said, we don't know the full story, but it seems like he had a very normal upbringing that might have just been a nature thing. You know, his anger issues. But then again, who's to say his dad didn't have some kind of anger issues that they kept locked in the closet, so to speak?
Could have. Totally could have. Maybe he was abused by a babysitter. We don't know all those details.
Right. So in most of these cases, I do say it's a nurture, the responsibility of the nurture, you know.
I agree with you. That's such a, from like ages 1 to 5 years old or 0 to 5 years old, it's such a huge part of a person's development that for, at least for Mary Bell, if she was telling the truth, she started getting abused at that time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man, it's tough to say. Cause when I heard the part where she got let out and given a new identity, at first I was like, that is stupid and dangerous. Don't let her out.
Well, yeah, but I guess they assessed that maybe as long as she was like bullying in school and in jail, they were probably like, well, she's probably okay. And it seemed like, I guess she was.
Yeah, absolutely. The identity thing, all of that stuff worked out pretty well as far as we know. Mm-hmm. She's a fucking grandma right now, sitting in a rocking chair.
I don't know about all that, but sure.
Interesting case.
Very interesting.
Let's leave it in the dust and never talk about it again.
Goodbye.
Feels good to let it go.
I'm sure you're glad to be done with this one, as am I.
Wipe our hands of it.
Mm-hmm. Use hand sanitizer.
Exactly. Like, just leave it behind. Well, that's our episode. Thank you for listening. If you want to see what Near Death Dolls is up to, follow us on Instagram. We're at Near Death Dolls Podcast. Tweet us on the Twitter, at Near Death Dolls. We're on Tumblr at neardeathdolls.tumblr.com. We're also on TikTok as of, like, today.
Yeah, as we record this. We're on TikTok. We haven't posted anything just yet, but we will. We'll be putting up some fun content soon.
Is it just Near Death Dolls on
TikTok? It's Near Death Dolls Podcast.
Near Death Dolls Podcast. Okay, guys, look that up on TikTok. By the time this episode comes out, we might have some content.
We should, yeah.
Now, if you want to help a doll out, subscribe and leave us a review, because that helps a lot, too.
An insane amount. You have no idea, but it really does.
I don't even know.
I do. And guys, guess what? We're looking for your spooky story. If you have any weird happenings, true crimey type things, anything you want to share with us that might be in the realm of near-death dolls, be sure to email it to us at neardeathdolls@gmail.com with Dear Dollies in the subject line, and be sure to tell us your preferred name and anything you want us to shout out. We need your stories, and we are happy to read them, okay?
Hell yeah.
And guys, as usual, thank you so much for all the support. You're amazing, wonderful, perfect little dollies with the cutest little faces. And until next time, bye-bye.
Cute little button noses. Ooh. I just want to boop.
We will boop your nose virtually.
Yes. Please let us know if you like a boop, because we'll boop.
We will boop you. A special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.